Something like 15 minutes later, Powell said lifelessly, "Let's go through the ship again. There must be something to eat somewheres." He did not sound hopeful. It was almost an admission of defeat. They divided in the corridor to the right and left. They could follow one another by the hard footsteps resounding, and they met occasionally in the corridor, where they would glare at each other and pass on. Powell's search ended suddenly, and as it did, he heard Donovan's glad voice rise boomingly. "Hey, Greg," it howled, "the ship has got plumbing. How did we miss it?" It was some 5 minutes later that he found Powell by hit and miss. He was saying, "Still no shower baths, though," but it got choked off in the middle. "Food," he gasped. The wall had dropped away, leaving a curved gap with two shelves. The upper shelf was loaded with unlabeled cans of a bewildering variety of sizes and shapes. The enameled cans on the lower shelf were uniform, and Donovan felt a cold draft about his ankles. The lower half was refrigerated. How? "It wasn't there before," said Powell, curtly. "That wall section dropped out of sight as I came in the door." He was eating. The can was the preheating type with enclosed spoon, and the warm odor of baked beans filled the room. "Grab a can, Mike." Donovan hesitated. "What's the menu?" "How do I know? Are you finicky?" "No, but all I eat on ships are beans. Something else would be first choice." His hand hovered and selected a shining elliptical can whose flatness seemed reminiscent of salmon or similar delicacy. It opened at the proper pressure. "Beans," howled Donovan and reached for another. Powell hauled at the slack of his pants. "Better eat that, sonny boy. Supplies are limited and we may be here a long, long time." Donovan drew back sulkily. "Is that all we have? Beans?" "Could be." "What's on the lower shelf?"
"Milk."
"Just milk?" Donovan cried in outrage.
"Looks it."
The meal of beans and milk was carried through in silence, and as they left, the strip of hidden wall rose up and formed an unbroken surface once more. Powell sighed. "Everything automatic. Everything just so. Never felt so helpless in my life. Where's your plumbing?"
"Right there.
And that wasn't among those present when we first looked, either." 15 minutes later, they were back in the glassed-in room, staring at each other from opposing seats. Powell looked gloomily at the one gauge in the room. It still said parsecs. The figures still ended in 1,000,000, and the indicating needle was still pressed hard against the zero mark. In the innermost offices of the U.S. Robot and Mechanical Men Corporation, Alfred Lanning was saying wearily, "They won't answer. We've tried every wavelength. Public, private, coded, straight. Even this sub-ether stuff they have now. And the brain still won't say anything?" He shot this at Dr. Calvin. "It won't amplify on the matter, Alfred," she said emphatically. "It says they can hear us. And when I try to press it, it becomes, well, it becomes sullen. And it's not supposed to. Whoever heard of a sullen robot?"
"Suppose you tell us what you have, Susan," said Bogart.
"Here it is. It admits it controls the ship itself entirely. It is definitely optimistic about their safety, but without details. I don't dare press it. However, the center of disturbance seems to be about the interstellar jump itself. The brain definitely laughed when I brought up the subject. There are other indications, but that is the closest it's come to an open abnormality." She looked at the others. "I refer to hysteria. I dropped the subject immediately, and I hope I did no harm, but it gave me a lead. I can handle hysteria. Give me 12 hours. If I can bring it back to normal, it will bring back the ship." Bogart seemed suddenly stricken. "The interstellar jump? What's the matter?" The cry was double from Calvin and Lanning. "The figures for the engine the brain gave us. Say,
I just thought of something. He left hurriedly. Lanning gazed after him. He said brusquely to Calvin, "You take care of your end, Susan."